Okay. I have brought this little thingy here. You might not all be able to see it, but for me, usually it's quite nice if I can put my thoughts into diagrams or pictures. That's something I like to do. And it also gives me kind of a red thread maybe for tonight. And also, it's basically, I mean, of course, the Buddha didn't have computers and things like that in those times, but he would use a lot of similes to explain things, because sometimes concepts in Buddhism are quite difficult, so it helps to put them in similes. And Ajahn Brahm, you know, he also tells a lot of stories and a lot of jokes, and that actually helps to bring the message across. So the topic of the talk tonight is USA CIA. If you put that online, maybe it attracts unwanted attention. So maybe just give it another title after I've spoken. But why USA and CIA? Basically, I was thinking for maybe the last year or half a year, I knew I'm going to teach on some stage. So I asked myself, well, what is meditation? How am I going to explain meditation to people? And then when I would be sitting silently or sometimes doing something else, a word would pop up and I would write it down. And then over time, words accumulated. And so I took the letters from those words and they actually became acronyms. So that's what the USA and the CIA stands for. But the USA is also called the land of the free and the land of the brave. And that's actually something we can use, or we actually need in meditation as well. The thing is just that in meditation we are looking for a different type of freedom. It's not the freedom of things and the freedom of being able to do whatever you want to do. Actually, these things are stopping us very often. These things can imprison us. So we are trying to let them go and to become free of them. And then the Central Intelligence Agency, what do you think might that stand for? Yes, yes. How do you call that?
Mind.
Yes, that's right. This concept of the mind, that's the Central Intelligence Agency. And we often talk about the mind connected to meditation. And so I thought maybe that would be nice to also talk about that a little bit, but hopefully not too complicated, with a few kind of examples so you can get a grasp what this mind thing actually is that everyone is talking about. All right, so USA. The U stands for unburdening. The S stands for settling, or to settle, and the A stands for arrive. So it's basically like the first layer when we start to meditate, what we have to do. So for me, a little simile is like when you're on a journey, and life is often like a journey. You come to a nice spot. So the first thing you do is you put down your backpack, you unburden. So in meditation, we unburden ourselves from the past, from the future, from all the worries that we might be carrying with us. So that's like the first step in meditation, to just put those burdens down and to let go of that. In German, we have a book. It's like a compilation of the books that Ajahn Brahm has written. And the title of the book is Birds Fly Without Luggage. So if you want to be free like a bird, just drop the luggage. Unburden yourself. Then the next part, when you stop on your journey and you want to have a little rest, you want to rest in peace, but not like the people in the cemetery. You actually want to rest in peace while you're alive, while you can actually enjoy it. So what you do is you settle. You start to sit down, not be driven by all these things in your life, and you try to settle your body, and you try to settle your thoughts. That's the main two areas. And it's basically like if you have a glass with a lot of stuff in it, and you can't really see through it. There's lots of particles and dirt and whatever it is. And if you just leave it alone, it will actually settle. And the particles go down to the bottom, and it starts to become clearer and clearer if we don't interfere with the process, if we don't shake it up all the time. And then the next part is that we actually start to arrive. Because often we are on that journey, okay, we put down the things, we sit down and settle, but then we start thinking about all sorts of stuff or whatever, so we can't really enjoy the rest we're having. So if you sit on a bench somewhere, enjoy the scenery. Have a look what is happening in the present moment, what is happening right here, right now. Good. So that's the first part. That's the USA. And then we go to the CIA. So the Central Investigation Agency. So basically, they are trying to find out who did it. Who is the mastermind behind everything that is happening here? And most important, what was the motive? Why did you do it? Why are we doing the things we are doing? Now, I want to just quickly, briefly go into this concept of the mind. Often we are told that the mind is the brain. And that's not really what is taught in Buddhism. The brain is basically just a simulator of experience. Because if you think of it, we do have all these channels, all these five senses coming into the brain, but the brain itself doesn't see. The brain doesn't feel, it doesn't hear, it doesn't taste, it doesn't touch. It just gets the information. It's like a big office with a big computer where all this information comes in. And then we make the world from the information we have. But what really struck me as a secondary school student when we started to have biology and like chemistry and these kind of things, that maybe what I'm experiencing, what I think is reality, is actually not what is out there. Maybe it's just what I'm perceiving inside, what I'm perceiving in my mind. So I found that really, really intriguing. The mind, usually in Buddhism, is kind of classically divided in four parts. One is called Vedana, which is feeling. So you feel if something is pleasant or if it's unpleasant or if it's somewhere in between. So basically you feel sad, you feel happy, you feel bored, you feel excited. But if you ask yourself, who is feeling sad? Sure, there is a response in the body, but it's not the body that is feeling sad. It's not the stomach that is happy. It's not my ear that is excited. That's the mind. The mind is what creates those feelings. The next part is sanya. This is perception. And I just wanted to bring up a little example from yesterday. I was hanging up my washing in the forest, and I turned around, and I perceived, I thought, there was a kangaroo. And it was there for maybe about 1.5 seconds, but then it disintegrated and became a tree trunk. So basically, I had the concept, I had this perception that there is a kangaroo, and it looked briefly like that, but then it changed and it became something else because I had a different concept that I was applying to that. That's something which is happening very quickly, and you have to have a little bit of mindfulness, say, but there is other examples. I just thought about it a little bit. There was a girl that was going to the same class with me for quite a while, and then she was in a one class higher because I went to New Zealand for a year. And she would change. You know, she would be desirable, and then suddenly she would be undesirable, and it would be switching back and forth. And I was going, this is weird. Is it the girl that is changing? Is it me? What's happening here? This is just another human being. But I'm basically projecting. I'm having a concept. And that's what the mind is doing. The other thing is sankhara and volition or will. And that's one of the things Ajahn Brahm talks about a lot. Basically, that is our intention. It's the motivation. It's why we're doing things. It's the things that are driving us. It's the desire to get something, and it's sometimes the not wanting of something, the pushing away of things. So that's the volition part. And then the last part is called vijnana, which is the consciousness. And the consciousness could be described as a screen. It's like a screen of the computer. Everything plays out on that screen. And now consciousness is always connected with attention, with us paying attention or not paying attention. And I just wanted to make it a bit more practical for you. So I would like to do a little experiment so you can actually feel what the mind is and what the mind does. So if you maybe just close your eyes for a little while so you can go inside a bit more and you're not distracted by all the other senses. And now just gently direct your attention to your right ear and see what is happening there. Can you feel something? Do you feel there is a movement of something going to the spot where the right ear is? And then let's go down to our hands. Feel the palms of the hands. Now, did something move? Was that the mind? And that gets a bit more complicated, but when someone did that with me for the first time, it was very interesting. Now just take your left hand and put your thumb and your index finger together so they're touching, still with your eyes closed. And feel that. Now, where is your mind? Is it in your thumb? Is it in your index finger? Or is there just a feeling of disembodied, just touching happening? And the last little thing, let's go down to the soles of our feet. Now, what do we feel here? We can feel, for example, the softness of our feet. But we can also feel the hardness of the floor. So, is the mind in our feet? Or is it even in the floor, where the hardness is? Yeah, so you can open your eyes again. I found that little experiment very interesting when it was done with me for the first time. And we think like mind, okay, up here, in the head. But it can actually move around. And Buddhism even suggests that the mind is not in the body, but that the body is in the mind. Get your head around that one. Anyway, that was a little excursion about the mind. So let's carry on with the CIA part. So we have three C's, we have two I's, and we have one A. So the first C stands for courage. The thing is, once we have settled down, once everything has become a bit quiet, when people meditate for the first time, it's a big circus in the mind. Lots of stuff happening there. And that's normal. Happens to everyone. But what we need here is we do need courage to face what is happening here. And to face our thoughts, to face our body, to face the silence. There are so many people that want to escape all the time. So, for example, if you're in the shower, Do you have to listen to the radio while you're showering? Or do you have to think of what's going to happen next? Or can you just shower? Can you just face the silence and the thoughts and whatever arises when you're showering? Can you be in the train without having to be on social media and writing SMSs and things like that? Because in meditation, we can't do these things. So it's good to practice it in day-to-day life as well. And then the last thing, of course, very often what happens when we go to bed at night, that's the time where we can't run away. And we are faced with our thoughts and things. Sometimes we take medication to numb these things, but one of the problems with numbing is, I took a little quote with me, which I find very, very powerful, from Brené Brown. She says, she's a researcher, "In another very unexpected discovery, my research also taught me that there's no such thing as selective emotional numbing. There is a full spectrum of human emotion, and when we numb the dark, we numb the light." We can't make a list of all the bad emotions and say, "I'm not going to numb these," and then make a list of the positive emotions and say, "I'm going to fully engage in those ones." That's from her book, The Gifts of Imperfections. Basically, this numbing thing, does anyone have an idea what that might describe? A condition that we talk about a lot. When you're numb, you don't feel the bad, but you don't feel the good either. Yes, it's called depression. Because you don't feel anything. Because you numb it out. You don't want to deal with it. And that's why the courage is so important. It has to be done gradually and slowly, but this is a very, very powerful point. So, in meditation, we can practice our courage muscle. Slowly, slowly, bit by bit. And then we can also experience the very nice, very deep emotions. Good, next one is curiosity. So we try to be receptive, but we try not to get stuck in things. So when you're a CIA agent, you have to find out what's happening, but you don't want to really get entangled in the whole story or get all those emotions that come up. You just want to see it from a certain distance, what is happening. So you don't just blindly believe what people are telling you. So when there is thoughts, when there is emotions, we don't blindly believe them. We ask questions. For example, when did this thought start? Where did it come from? What is happening in the present moment? Or how does it feel? How can I care for whatever is happening? And that's basically the next part, the next C. Caring is very, very, very important. We have to care for whatever is arising in our meditation. So we're basically opening the door so they come in. But it's important that we open two doors. We open the front door and we open the back door. So what often happens is these things come and often we don't really have to do anything. And they leave again. Sometimes we do need to engage but not get involved, and that's what care is, that's what kindness is. That loosens the whole atmosphere, makes them, those emotions or feelings or thoughts, whatever, feel at ease, and they either stay put and are quiet, or they're happy and satisfied and they leave again. Good. Now we go to the next level, which is inspiration and inclination. And that's actually very, very important. The inspiration part in meditation is often left out. So when we do all these things that I've described before, what happens is when we let go, there is always release, there is relaxation, there is pleasure. And that's something we should really treasure. And that's something we should really grow and encourage. And I think that's something which is not taught enough. We're often afraid to actually tolerate these things and encourage these things. good. And then the inclination part is that the mind starts to get used to these things, really be interested, and starts to incline. So it's like when you are someone who really, really likes coffee, you incline to the coffee shops. You really kind of incline to the taste. And when you're collecting stamps, you're really, really interested in it. Some people might not be interested in it. And if we could be interested the same way into stillness, into peace, then we automatically incline towards these things. And then the last thing which happens is basically this awakeness. And that's what meditation is all about. Being deeply relaxed, but being awake at the same time. Good. We're going to do the practical part very soon. I just want to emphasize one little thing. Ajahn Brahm emphasizes it a lot. He says we shouldn't really talk about concentration in meditation. And I try to use a gesture to make it a bit more understandable. So if you take your hands and put them in front of you, or if I do that, it's like that is what concentration is like. I'm trying to get somewhere and squeeze everything. It's very tight. And my two arms are representing control and force. And that's how I try to meditate, try to get concentrated. But it doesn't really help. It gets tight and yucky. But if you turn the whole thing around and have your elbows touching where your belly button is, then you're allowing a lot of space for whatever is there. And you have the two arrows which I have here. One of them is relaxation and the other one is receptiveness. And that actually also leads to a focus. It also leads to a collectedness of the mind, but without the force. So maybe I leave you with these two things before we go and meditate. Whenever things happen in meditation and you start to feel, oh, I'm trying to force things or to control things, just think of relaxation again. Just re-relax and try to open the awareness to be receptive. And that will hopefully help you. Wonderful. Okay. Well, enough talking. Let's try the practical part. One thing I would like to do is what you can also use in your day-to-day life later on is we usually start to settle the body. So I'd like you to just stand up first of all, because we're standing a lot in our jobs or everywhere. And just to try and bring a bit of mindfulness to our posture, first of all, because that can help. So if you have your feet firmly on the ground, and there may be just, it's like a line down from your shoulders. So they're just slightly spread apart. And just feel the connection to the floor down there. And then we go to our knees and make sure they're not locked. So they're a little bit bent, slightly bent. So it's a bit bouncy. And then we go up to our hips. And if you imagine where your tailbone is, and just slightly tuck it in so it's pointing down to the ground. And relax your belly. Very good. And then we go up to our shoulders. And here we make sure they're nice and open.
So maybe breathe in, open them up, and when you breathe out, just let them drop towards the floor. And then imagine there is a string at the crown of your head. And just stretch it upwards, so your chin goes slightly in, tucks in a little bit. So you stretch it and then you relax it. And now you should feel that the body is aligned, that the energies in your body can flow. And that's something you can do at home anytime. When you're washing the dishes, just take 1 or 2 minutes and relax while you're standing. Good. Wonderful. Okay, now we can sit down. Try to take that mindfulness, that energy we have created with you. And allow yourself to unburden. To put the backpack down and forget all the past and the future. All the worries. And then let your body settle. Which means just checking in with it and feeling how it feels right now. And see if you can do anything for your body so it feels more comfortable, more relaxed, more at ease. If you need to wiggle a bit or scratch anything or loosen anything, please do so. Now is the time to do that. The more we can take care of the body now, the easier the meditation will be. The easier it will be to just drop the body. If there is anything happening in the body which might be uncomfortable or unpleasant and you can't really do anything about it by moving it because it's on the inside, just meet it with curiosity. see what is happening there, wherever it is in your body. And surround it, embrace it with your awareness. Give it space. If there's any other parts in your body that feel unpleasant, just do the same thing. Wrap your awareness around them, embrace them. And give them space. And you might notice when you give them space, it's like they're expanding. And relaxing. Please notice and be receptive when this relaxation, when this letting go happens. And really value the peace, the joy that arises from it. when your mind wanders, which is very normal, just ask yourself, what is happening in the present moment? What do I feel right now? Whatever arises, meet it with understanding, with warmth, with care. And feel how it relaxes. When the body is fairly relaxed, it kind of fades into the background. Just let it fade away. What usually arises then is our mind, our mental world. Thoughts and feelings. Just imagine that you can mentally massage them. And like your body relaxes, you can also relax your mind, the mental world. matter what arises. Just relax around it. Open up and be receptive. And allow it to ease. For the next, maybe say 10 minutes of the meditation, just carry on doing that, meeting whatever arises with as much attention, kindness and warmth as you can. Or if your body and mind are pretty settled and relaxed and faded away, just ask yourself, am I breathing in or am I breathing out right now? Doesn't matter where the breath is happening, just know the breath, if it's going in or if it's going out. And allow your mind to settle, to rest on the breath. Whenever you find your mind, your attention is somewhere else, please don't judge yourself. Just drop in the question, what is happening right now? What do I feel? Or invite the mind to stay with the breath. Whatever is happening, just relax. Open up your awareness. Bodily sensations or thoughts or emotions pop up. Meet them with understanding. Care for them. We're now getting close to the end of the meditation. Please ask yourself, how much peace, how much relaxation have I gained? Does my body, does my mind feel different than when we started? I'll now do a little chant to end the meditation. May I abide in well-being, in freedom from affliction, in freedom from hostility, in freedom from ill will, in freedom from anxiety, and may I maintain well-being in myself. May everyone abide in well-being, in freedom from hostility, in freedom from ill will, in freedom from anxiety, and may they maintain well-being in themselves. May all beings be released from all suffering, and may they not be parted from the good fortune they have attained. When they act upon intention, all beings are the owners of their action and inherit its results. Their future is born from such actions, companion to such actions, and their actions will be their home. Okay, you can gently wiggle around on the chair and open your eyes. Very good. How was that? Bit too long for the new people? No? It's okay? Half an hour, I think it was. Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah. quite a stretch. Yeah. Okay. We have a bit more time. I've realized quite a lot of information before. Hope it's not too much. I thought for the next part we could talk about another CIA, but about caring in action. So before we talked a bit about meditation and then did the practical part of that, and I wanted to talk a little bit about how caring could look like in day-to-day life, like when you're out there and when you're not sitting in meditation.
Just check in case there are any questions from the newcomers.
Right now?
Yeah.
Sure.
Just in case.
Please. Yes. Is there any questions about the meditation we just did, or about? Yes. Sure. Please.
Can you care for a thought when it pops up into your head?
Can you, or how?
How do you? So you've got this thought or worry.
Yes.
How do you care for it?
I did have a little quote which I forgot to mention before. I really like that quote. It's from Byron Katie.
Oh, yeah.
And a lot of people often ask how this letting go business works. And she had this very nice quote where she said, I don't let go of my thoughts. I meet them with understanding, and then they let go of me. So one of the problems with thoughts is that we get involved
that we get interested, that we try to control them, to force them this way or that way. But if we instead try to treat them like a friend, try to be kind to them. So the little simile I had with the door in the beginning, so we open the door, because if we don't open the door, then the thoughts will be banging on the door. So they want attention. So we do open the door. We have the back door open. And that difficult part is not to get carried away by the thought, not to get involved in the thought. So we try to just open up the awareness, be there, watch it, and just imagine that we are sending it kindness, that we are being attentive, that we're being there. So it's like we're listening, so the thought can feel understood, and then it's happy. So if you give a thought attention. But the problem is, it's a very fine line between getting involved and wanting to control something, or wanting to get something out of something, or just being there and listening. Yes, please.
Could you talk to it? I mean, like mentally, can you have a conversation when the thought comes up, like it was an object, and
yes,
have a dialogue with it, and everything's nice, and just...
You can, yes, if that helps. If you want to, like, personalize it.
Yeah. Understand.
Yes.
Having a, don't get vicious with it. Just have a conversation to understand it.
Yes.
Okay, find out what the grievance is.
Yes, yes.
Happy, no go.
Yes. One thing which I feel is very useful is thoughts are these concepts, and once we start a conversation, we can get caught up in the conversation.
Yeah.
So that's why I was saying before, if something pops up, you can maybe ask yourself, where did it come from, and have a bit of curiosity. But you can also ask yourself, how does it feel? So you're looking at the thought, and you're asking yourself, why did this thought come? What is the worry of the thought? How does the thought feel like? And what can I do so that the thought relaxes? So it's like you're going to hospital to visit someone, and the patient in the bed is your thought. So you don't go there and ask, how are you? Because you know the thought is going to be awful, because you wouldn't be in hospital otherwise. And you don't try to strike up a huge conversation, but you try to be there for your thought, to care for your thought, and to help it relax, to help it feel at ease. And then it's happy. And then it will leave you alone. Yeah. That's basically the thing I wanted to talk about. I did speak to the people in the BSV about caring. And we have this little poster here. With two teddy bears, one putting his hand on the other teddy bear, and that's what compassion is for me. But the trouble with the word compassion is it actually means, com means with, and patio is the root from passion, like the passion of Christ, which means suffering. So it means suffering with, and that's not really what we want. So we don't want to go into hospital and suffer with a patient who is in the bed. What we want to do is we want to have empathy. We want to feel with the thought. And basically that's what these guys are doing there. He's just there for the thought. He says, hello thought, what can I do for you to make you feel more at ease? Make you feel relaxed. Yes. Okay. Any other questions arising now? No. Okay. Let me just go through that one here. There's one more question. Please. Questions are always good. Yes.
Please, could you give us an example
of
being friendly to a thought?
please could you show us the thought that you might have had and what actually you do with it?
Right, yes, okay. Let's say the thought is irritated, and it is a thought which has an angry tone to it. So it comes in and it tells its big story of what is happening and who did what and why you did it and why you should get angry and why it's justified. So now you could get caught up in the conversation or strike up a conversation. But for me, I try to picture this thought, which is angry, like a child that is throwing a tantrum. So you're not going to be able to explain to this child why it doesn't make sense to be angry, or why it doesn't make sense to throw a tantrum, because it's not going to work most of the time. So what you try to do is to reassure that child, to be there and feel with it and feel that there is anger and that there is irritation arising. But now, instead of having that anger and irritation in yourself, you meet that with kindness. So it's almost like you're looking at that child and you're stroking it, or you're taking it in your arms, or you're just comforting it. It's not really something you have to say, isn't it? It's not going to help. But just being there, giving it this reassurance and giving it that feeling of not throwing a tantrum yourself. And through that, you kind of open the door to that peace, to that calm, to that relaxation. And once you've opened the door, it can step in and feel what is happening inside of you, and then also start to relax, also start to settle. And then it kind of goes away. So with anger in day-to-day life, the problem is usually that we blame other people, or that we go outside, there is a very uncomfortable feeling, and we say, this person is wrong, we have to do something about it. And what we ignore is the feeling which made us go outside, which is a yucky, uncomfortable, unpleasant feeling inside. And if we can hold that, if we can meet that, if we can care for that, if we can listen to that, just listen and be attentive, and then it can speak out whatever it needs to speak out, and then it realizes that there is nothing reacting to it, and it starts to calm down more and more and more until that anger is gone. Angry thought. I don't know, you had another kind of thought in mind, or
no,
is that
okay, supposing you have a thought arise which gives rise, say for example, to a feeling hurt.
Yes.
Okay. So you're aware of that, and you're aware of it as a thought, and okay, you're aware of the feeling.
Yes.
Okay. So you're actually not in, well, you can feel your body and your mind is engaged, but you're still holding separate from it because you're actually recognizing what's going on.
Yes.
Okay, so you're saying that within that recognition, or then you're giving rise to the thought that this is a thing which you can be gentle with.
Yes. Yeah, the first part is recognizing it, accepting it, allowing it to be here. Because when you want to let go straight away, you're basically pushing it away. So you're like opening your hand, allowing whatever it is, the little butterfly, to land on your hand. And then you care for it, you listen to it, you send it as much warmth as you can, and then it either stays there and it's not a problem, or it takes off. Yeah. Okay. Anything else? Yes, might be a bit too long for the whole thing. Basically, maybe let's just talk about the caring part on top without all the pitfalls at the bottom that I had there, and that might help a little bit with the question which was there before. I tried to have a few like headlines for things that can arise. So caring is, I value your presence, would be a sentence. So you're accepting, you're valuing the presence of whatever there is, of the anger, of the thought that arises, of the patient that is in the bed. But it's not that much about the story that goes on, the whole thing that keeps those thoughts going. Uh-huh. Yeah, it's pretty late, isn't it? And then the other thing we can have is interest, where you basically ask the person, how are you? What's going on for you? And that's finding out about that feeling that we were talking about, getting to the feeling tone. And then the other thing is the striving to understand. So you can ask the thought or the person, tell me more, to find out about their feelings, about what's going on in them. But you're staying in that space of just receptiveness, of relaxation, of just taking in what's happening. And then the reaching part, reaching out part, when you actually ask, yes, how can I help? How can I reassure you? How can I be there for you? And then also the being with part, that's often what is so difficult when we come in a situation where there is suffering happening. We often think we have to fix it, we have to make it good again, and very often that's not really possible. But what we can is care. We can always be there for the other person, like those two teddies before. Just share in those feelings and be that reassuring person.
Actually, that's a very good point. Our neighbour recently got burgled. They broke in and smashed the house up.
Yes.
You can't tell her what she should do. It's not about fixing.
No.
You said everybody always wants to fix everything.
Yes.
We're all good at fixing stuff. This is what you should do. This is what you should have said. Or
yes.
This is what you should have done.
Yes. So it's that acceptance part that these things do happen, that it is normal.
It's really difficult.
Yes. Yes, but once you learn it, then you can help someone else to do the same process. Because that's one of the things that I realize, as monastics, we are called into many, many different situations where people are in trouble, where people have died, where, yeah, really difficult stuff has happened. And we don't even know the people sometimes. And then so you ask yourself, how can I prepare myself to go in a situation like that? And the best way to prepare is to learn to deal with your own feelings, to accept them, to embrace them, to relax them. Because when you come into that situation, what usually happens is the feeling in the other person triggers something in you. It triggers your feelings. So the thing is, what you are feeling is never what the other person is feeling. Mm. You are feeling your reaction to what has happened in the other person. And if you learn to deal with that, then you can help the other person to do the same with the hurt, with the disappointment, whatever it is inside them.
Fear,
yes, anything.
Frustration.
Yes. Oh. Yes. And then up here, that's one of the most important parts. And I guess that's what we are learning in meditation. To listen and to connect. And I had like a sentence everywhere which is explaining the different concept, but here it just says silence, attention. We're often afraid, you know, to go over to the neighbor because we have to deal with the stuff that arises in us. But if we just tell them, look, I'm here for you if you want anything, or if we do something nice for that person, we cook something and bring it over, or we write a card or whatever it is, that helps much more than actually going and saying, oh, you know, it's not that bad. It happens to everyone. This is Armadale. What do you say? Or whatever it is, you know. And it's not going to help at all.
No.
This is life, basically. That's true, but... Okay. Anything else, or I think we're about...
Could you just give a tip to the people who've never meditated before about what to do next?
Yes.
5 minutes a day or something.
Yes.
Yes.
If you can get a bit of a routine with meditation, that is wonderful. But the thing is, we don't want to think, you know, now I'm going to meditate for the rest of my life and every day without a miss. Then you're definitely not going to do it. So even if you tell yourself, you know, I had a bit of an experience here, I've realized that I can relax, that it is actually quite pleasant what we're doing here, and I could be doing that at home. So whenever there's a suitable time, I don't know if it's after work and you come back after work, just to sit down and to feel your body and to relax your body. Even if you just do that for a few minutes. And then the most important thing is to feel how it is when you sit down, and then after those 5 minutes or whatever it was, don't force yourself to do, well, you know, it doesn't have to be 5 or 10 or whatever, maybe just sit down, relax, see how long it's comfortable, and then see what is the difference. What did this actually do for me? And then that will be the motivation for you to do it again and again and again. Not the idea of, I have to do this, and it has to be that long or that long. Or even if you're doing it in bed, that can be something really helpful. If you do body sweeps, maybe another time I can do a bit of a longer body sweep. You can do that when you lie down in the evening. And then if you fall asleep, wonderful. If you don't fall asleep, just enjoy the relaxation.